The following KOPN podcast is made possible by the generous donations of listeners like you. Please consider a donation to listener-supported community radio, KOPN. You can donate securely on our website at kopn.org.
I'm Janelle, and I'm in the studio with my cohort in crime, Rich.
Rich. Evil Rich.
We're talking about babies. We're talking about, boy, respecting babies for the miracles that they are, and not to be second-guessed in their healthy status by clueless humans who... Frankly, are way in over their heads.
What are you talking about?
I don't know. I'm just babbling.
What is this about? Babies and people in over their heads and harming babies? What are you talking about?
I'm talking about limited human scientific knowledge applied to systems that are far beyond their capacity to grasp.
Wow. So what does that mean for the average person out there listening today?
It means that we are heir to centuries of medical cluelessness masquerading as science.
So are you saying that what happens to babies and mothers at birth hurts them?
Absolutely. It hurts them for their entire lives. And when you mass produce these traumatized and brain-damaged people in a society, you wind up with a dysfunctional society.
Yeah, but we have women and babies that are living now that would have never lived. Women aren't dying anymore. Babies aren't dying anymore.
That's not the only measure of a healthy birth. Mortality is just the baseline, most gross measure of a healthy birth. There are lots of ways.
Well, people are trained to do the right thing at birth and take care of women and babies.
And I don't question their motives, at least most of them. But
I love being the devil's advocate to the Richmeister.
The Richmeister. But you know, good intentions and years of education. I'm sorry, that's not enough. They're dealing with a biological system that even now. Science is continually finding out new things about. And some of these things, you know, a baby intuitively knows what to do, how to get born, how to survive, how to thrive.
What?
If its mother cooperates, you know, if the mother follows her own intuition. You know.
I'm sorry, I guess we're using a different approach this week. Every week we start out trying to explain what in the world does Thought Crime Radio, Voices for the Human Rights of Babies, mean? Mm-hmm. What does birth have to do with all these things going on today? So we've been trying different ways to...
approach the subject?
Yeah.
Well, you know, what does this have to do with thought crime? I don't know. I mean, it has to do with brainwashing. It has to do with essentially mass brainwashing through repetitive re-traumatization of each generation. Our society, you know, human relations are replete with causal pathways that create looping structures in intergenerational behavioral patterns. And does that sound... I have too much coffee.
I get it.
I have too much coffee in my system, but...
Well, why don't we bring on our guest? Because this is our third week with Dr. Uh-huh. Stuart Fishbein from the L.A. Southern California area, where they're getting rain, where it never rains, they're getting rain. This is his third week with us. We thought 3 weeks was going to be enough to cover a lot, and it seems like we've still just scratched the surface. So I'd like to get him on. We've talked in the past couple of weeks about his opinions, his perception as an experience as an obstetrician for almost 30 years, and he's a huge supporter of midwives. He's had midwives in his practice, and he's speaking out very publicly with his professional group, ACOG, the American College of Obstetricians and Gynecologists, and in support of Ricky Lake's film, The Business of Being Born, and we're trying to get him some support here as well, because it's very hard to be in that system and to speak out against the system and the brotherhood that is created when you work in those kinds of systems. And we talked about informed consent last year. Seems like it was just yesterday. Informed consent and the ability to say no when a woman makes a decision that she does not want to have a cesarean rather than a vaginal birth, for example. So we'd like to talk about the malpractice and litigation issue, because anybody that's in the birth arena, whether you're an OB, a midwife, a doula, if you research it, you understand that the litigation and our litigious society is really a big momentum behind what's happening in birth. So we want to talk to him about how we can work on that. And I'm concerned about the midwives as they become licensed, because I've seen them going down the same path as the doctors. If we're not changing a key thing, which I think is parents being the male and the woman, but in particular the woman being responsible for her choices and being given informed consent and being able to make the choices and be responsible, because right now, even with midwifery births at home, people are now starting to sue midwives if they choose to have a home birth. For all the right reasons, they do the education, but something happens, they can still sue the midwife. And I think it's not serving women, and I'd like to find out what he has to say about all that. Do you have anything to add to that?
We did talk briefly on the phone yesterday about what a measure of how controlled the society is, that people have delegated the responsibility for their own health to strangers, profit-motivated strangers who represent institutions that far predate any of our births, and what that means exactly, and how that's even become institutionalized in our laws. It's very difficult. In fact, in some countries, I believe it's illegal to actually have a home birth, and it's starting to get that way in this country. The legal impediments to taking charge of your own life and optimizing your child's success and ability to thrive is becoming very very difficult from a legal standpoint. And
it's a huge fight, and Dr. Fishbein is one of the physicians who's trying to bridge that gap. And welcome to the show, Dr. Fishbein.
Oh, hi again, guys.
Hi.
Hey, good to have you back.
How you doing?
I'm doing fine. I love listening to your banter. you guys have been obviously doing this for a while, and especially you're like an old married couple, the way you finish.
Well,
I think Dylan knows exactly what you're going to say, Rich, so yeah. We finish each other's sentences.
I don't know if I could finish his sentences, because even today I'm sitting there looking at him going, wow.
Yeah, well, he's a little bit higher on the intellectual evolutionary scale than most of us. But, it's a good topic today because it really, obviously we're going to stick to talking about medical legal stuff and birth, but it infiltrates every aspect of our lives in the United States. From going to the corner grocery store to going skiing to buying a movie, to buying a ticket for this, or traveling on an airplane, or making any decision, or trying to add on to your bathroom, or at your house, or hiring somebody to work for you. Every aspect of our lives is infiltrated with the fears of litigation and the symbiosis. Rich often talks about the possibility that there's higher motives, lower motives, I guess, or conspiracies behind some of the things that go on. And the symbiosis between the trial lawyers of America and the insurance companies of America is one that people often don't put together. Without one, you don't really have the other.
Yeah, in terms of conspiracies, I have no idea, of course, although the large-scale behavior of these institutions is... raises questions,
right?
But doctors are in the same the practicing physician is in the same position as the typical person on the street. They have to trust authorities. Most doctors do not have time to actually do the research. They might even read the journals and stuff, but the journals are financed by pharmaceutical companies and other interests, and it's difficult to know what to believe. You really have to, I think, start at square one, and the first thing you need to do is trust nature. Trust yourself. Trust your body.
Trust birth.
I agree.
Yeah.
I agree. And that problem, of course, is that no matter how much you trust something, there will always be occasions where things don't go as you had planned or as expected or as you had hoped, and the outcomes will not be as good as you would like. And again, that's in every aspect of our lives, but it's just sticking with birth. It creates a situation where even if people are extremely well-informed and well-consented, they may have a bad outcome that is financially unsustainable for them, and therefore this country has a remedy system which involves lawsuits and the legal system and litigation. And it is detrimental to the progress that you guys and I would like to see made toward trusting your own body and allowing people the dignity to make decisions that affect them, also with the assumption that the responsibility for making these decisions will be theirs. That doesn't happen because people want what they want when they want it, but if it doesn't go the way they want it to, then they want to blame somebody else for it.
That's a huge issue across the board in our culture.
Yep.
But
you really see that in birth.
It is quite a leap to assume that the institutional interests of the organization that trained your physician are identical to your own. It really is a huge leap.
Say that again.
It's a leap to assume that your personal optimization, your life optimization, is compatible even with the institutional interests of organized medicine.
And even the interests of the individual practitioner.
Yes, but from an institutional perspective, medicine is much more than just it's much more than just science applied to human health. It has economic, historical, just institutional baggage that oftentimes eclipses, your well-being, your baby's well-being. And this shows up in our, crime statistics, health statistics.
So to put this into terms, Dr. Fishbein, for many of the listeners that we have around the world and even around the country here, people who are supporters of midwifery and natural birth, one of the things I appreciate about having you here is that you can speak as a physician to let us know, in your words, in your experience, what it's like for you to work in the system, because I think doctors and nurses get a bad rap, and people don't realize, I think what you're trying to say, the flip side of that, the optimism is that you have the same struggles that people have coming into the hospital. People have a struggle when they come in, they want to have a certain birth, give birth to their child in a certain way, and they're restricted. They don't really realize that you, the physician, are restricted as well.
Oh, yeah. We are very restricted, and eventually that restriction, what it does is it influences how physicians practice and make decisions, because, as you mentioned earlier, physicians don't often have time to research every article or to go to Washington and argue every aspect of a health care bill, nor do they have the time to go to every hospital committee meeting where full-time faculty or administrative staff can sit and make decisions that really don't affect them because they're not actually the ones doing the work. But these meetings go on behind closed doors or in committees where there's confidentiality and it can't be discussed, and suddenly a new edict comes down that dictates how doctors are supposed to manage things or practice things or alters the way that they've been doing things for years simply because somewhere, someplace, there was a bad outcome, and the analysis of this bad outcome in some faraway place said that you should probably, in order to limit the liability of the institution, institute these policies. So they institute policies without any really understanding of the effect it really has on the individual care that the mother may receive or that the doctor or midwife may give, because that's not their concern. All their concern is to limit the liability of the institution they work for, and with a little bit of sarcasm is to save their and keep their job and make themselves look like they're doing something important.
So you're the face of the system when a woman and her partner or whoever come in to give birth. You're the face of this system that is really invisible to those people. It's just like if somebody goes into the social service system, the caseworker has to put up with all these rules. They see the person there and the needs, but they can't meet them.
Oh, I mean, I can't tell you guys how many times, whether it's an insurance company or a hospital, a patient has a problem with, say with their bill. They can't get a human being on the phone to explain something to them. Who do they come to? They'll come to me. They'll come to the doctor, who has nothing to do with the insurance company. I didn't hire them, and I have nothing to do with the hospital. I didn't hire them, but we are the face to the faceless people that control our lives.
The system.
But we have no or very little say in what goes on in that system. And it gets really back to the point that most of the things that interfere with a woman's ability to choose for herself and her baby, I don't necessarily follow common sense or science. They follow economics and litigation, and those are the three things that we talked about last week were economics, expediency, and litigation mitigation. And things that are done in medicine are done for one of those three reasons almost all the time, at least on the corporate level or on the administrative level. They're never done, I think, on an administrative level with the priority being the autonomy and decision-making of an individual. Okay, they don't even consider really individuals when they do these things, and that's why big isn't necessarily better.
And they don't value the more ethereal aspects of birth, the less quantifiable, like the psychological well-being of the baby. And that really is what this show is all about. Is this system has grown into a monster that imprints babies with trauma and sensory deprivation, and you know. You have sensory deprivation in a baby who experiences, 50% growth in brain mass in the first year of its life?
Mm-hmm.
You know, this is exponentially, this is explosive growth, and you are depriving this baby of its mother during the most critical time of its life.
The first few hours.
And
that's right.
This is torture. You know, this is nothing but torture.
We think it's a systematic, that somebody... Somebody knows. They're like, the system is organic. It becomes alive because we can't stop it. We can't really name who's doing it, but the system itself allows for all of our mother-child relationships.
The thing is that this research has been done. I mean, you know, people who are paying attention to this have known this for years, and somehow, well, especially James Prescott, his research in the 60s and 70s, you know, at the NIH, his research was just explosive, and it was suppressed. Mm-hmm. It was deliberately suppressed by high-level government bureaucrats, and it does raise questions of what the agenda is here.
we don't know who, but I know that a lot of times the physicians are the who are the face of the system are the ones who get the blame.
Right. Well, see, but your points are well taken. However, the well-being of babies in the immediate postpartum period doesn't enter into one of the three tenets of our current healthcare system. The three things that I said again: economics, expediency, and litigation mitigation. Maybe long term it enters into it, but long term doesn't matter to the institution or the individuals that are doing this at the time. And so
you just said it. That's big.
Yeah, it's hard to establish proof that muscular dystrophy is related to cord clamping.
Cerebral palsy.
I'm sorry.
Sorry to interrupt you, but that statement, if you could say it again, was huge.
What did I say?
I can't even remember now.
No, we'll have to play it back.
Yeah, you can go to the podcast.
I said something that what happens in the moment is
oh, that
more important.
They don't care about long term.
That's right.
They
yeah.
don't.
More important than the long term.
And ding, 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 ding. That's what this show is about, people. Please, we need you to care about the long term.
And this is strictly an issue with the legal difficulty in proving cause and effect when you're talking about something that appears years down the road.
To see that when you separate a mother and a baby at birth and you mutilate the baby, that down the road that woman and that child are going to have issues. That child may act these issues out in society.
I mean,
I don't even know that it's even something that's even disputed in many facets of our lives. I think what Rich always talks about with circumcision, and we talk about with separation or from the mother. I mean, I think most people would say that that's probably true, but. But it doesn't really matter to the institutions that make the rules. It doesn't matter.
That's incredible.
But we've talked about it, and you've said it too, and you know it very well, that when people out there get it, when the man and the woman go into the hospital and they say, you are not going to separate my baby, you are not going to do this, or better yet, I'm just going to have the baby in my arms, and it starts to hit the pocketbook of the system, that's when we get the changes.
But how can we make that happen? I mean... Even if a mother is well informed, sometimes she's a single mother, but even if she has a husband attending with her, he has to be well informed enough to actually make a stand, because the mother is generally not going to be in a position to physically resist the assaults of these doctors and nurses who want to take that baby and cut the cord and take the baby somewhere else.
And that leads us right back to the informed consent and the people being responsible for their birth.
Well, it's even more than that, Janelle. It's a situation where, you have to take advice from somebody who has medical training, and you're a truck driver, you're an accountant. You can't say that, no, my baby's staying here, if some medical expert is saying, no, we need to take your baby over there because your baby's breathing faster, your baby's doing this, your baby's doing that.
And your baby's
you don't know that there's plenty of other options. You don't know that it's okay to, if the baby's breathing fast, leave it on the mother's chest and come over and look at it over here.
And leave the cord intact.
Leave the cord intact so that the baby's getting oxygen from the mother's breathing. Okay. I mean, most people don't know that. So your shows and books that we've written and websites and stuff that you would probably have links to and that we do on our blog, those are the places where people can go to get the information so that they can do this on an individual basis. Because as I said, the individual in the current formula, and probably for many years long before I was born, doesn't really matter. Okay, it matters to us, of course. When I say that, I'm talking about the institutions that we are just kind of sort of disgusted with. But it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. You could talk to your blue in the face to an administrator, and he's looking basically over your shoulder who else is in the room, because they're not even interested in hearing what you have to say, unless there's a financial aspect to it that you can get them to do something where it might be beneficial to their institution. And even then, I have suggested to several institutions that I've worked at that they allow midwifery in, or they make their birth center, their labor and delivery unit, a birthing-friendly unit where there's no VBACs in two-county area. Make your hospital a VBAC-friendly hospital. Have an anesthesiologist and staff. Yes, it will cost you more initially up front, but the goodwill, the draw, you'll be drawing people from all over the place, midwives, doctors who are supportive, will come and get staff privileges at your place. They'll refer patients to doctors who are there. You will build, they're not interested. They're not interested. I could be talking to the wall.
Even though that could be a moneymaker.
Even though it could be a moneymaker. That's correct.
And now, the reason that is interesting.
And the reason I was quoted by the CEO of the hospital where I'm having most of my issues with, the reason that he was quoting me is he said, well, I have to take my cue from the OB department, and the OB department doesn't want it. Now, the OB department is usually, you know, either in a bigger institution, it's a bunch of academicians who aren't really practicing, or it's usually a bunch of guys who've been together for years and really have control of their community hospital and don't want other...
How could these academicians... Is that the right word?
Yeah.
How could they not know about cord clamping, for instance?
They do know about it.
How is that possible?
They do.
And here's the question, then. Why are they allowed to get by with it? This goes back to last week's show when I started out sharing my experience of my birth and how disempowering it was and how it took me 25 years to even name that it was like a rape. Like, if it's not about money, Dr. Fishbein, is it about power? Is it truly, like Rich and I talk about, like a lot of us talk about, it's about disempowering women?
Neutering women, that's how it is. It's
you know, I don't know that. I can't believe that there's people that actually sit in a room and think that stuff up, but I know there are people that sit in a room and decide what's safest for the hospital, what's most economical for the hospital.
Well, we don't have to say things out loud for it to be unconscious.
Well, unconscious maybe, but yeah. You know, I mean, there's enough reasons with the three biggies that we talked about that explain why they do what they do. I mean, first of all, when a baby goes to the nursery, there's an RVS code for that and a CPT code for that, and then you can bill. If the baby stays with the mother, you can't really bill for that, okay? If the baby gets to the NICU, which is the intensive care unit because it's breathing fast, there's a much bigger cha-ching for that than there is for going to the regular nursery or going to staying with the mother.
Well, how do we turn this then so that they get paid for keeping a baby and a mother together?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, the more, if you put some central power over them, then what all will happen is reimbursement will go down and nobody will get good care. So, I mean, it's not just a simple equation where you can figure that out. I think it has to come from the individual. And it has to come from people standing up for what they believe in. And if people don't know, and there's always going to be more people who don't know or don't care, then there will be people who care.
And these options are being taken away as we speak, you know. That's
it's not,
the problem.
You know, and everyone should care because everybody in America has a sister or a daughter or granddaughter or somebody that's going to eventually be using this system. So it's not just, oh, I'm done with my kids, I don't really care anymore. I mean, it shouldn't matter that way, but we all have busy lives, and it's not something where people can actually see change happening or see that their individual efforts are going to make a difference. It's not like giving to a political campaign where you feel like maybe you can make a difference, or it's not like giving to a fundraiser, your local library, so they can buy a new set of computers for their library or something, because you can see concrete action with that. This is something that is just something that's insidious, below the radar, and again, has to create that sea change where, as we've talked about in the two other shows, where ultimately an ideal idea would be to get a competitive model.
But a lot of people who listen to this station, I think, are clued into the idea for the need for social change, and they do need to understand that we are talking about, you know, a socially something that matters on a mass scale in this country and mm-hmm. in this world, for anyone that is concerned with peace and harmony and human compassion and joy. I'm sorry?
Empathy,
yes.
Humans are empathetic.
These are things, you know, empathy is what we need in this society, and these practices are a direct insult and an assault on the capacity for the ability, you know, of a newborn to achieve empathy. Because, you know, when you're in the defensive mode, when you've been robbed of blood and oxygen right after birth, and then you're stolen from your mother, you know, that's the word, stolen.
You don't get to make eye contact.
You don't
you're
get to
treated roughly, things stuck in your face, and you're...
You don't get to experience, you know, the full, you know, harmony of being alive and being joyful on your mother's chest. You're stolen from your mother and put in a sensory deprivation chamber. Actually, they wrap them up tightly in some kind of a cloth, allegedly to to
soothe them.
Mimic the womb, right?
Yeah, to mimic the womb. And what this is like a straitjacket. It's a sensory deprivation chamber that robs the baby of all kinds of tactile input that would otherwise achieve at a time when its brain is literally exploding with neurons.
Well, you know, I think that bringing this back on topic, because I think that what you say is right, it all boils down, in a sense, because it's the main topic today, to the way our legal system works in the medical community. And I'd like to make two major points, because you brought one up, Rich, about, you know, how do we make it so that it's more economical for babies to stay on the mother's chest than it is to go to the NICU. I don't know that you can do that, because I think that, you know, like anything else in America, we are a capitalist country, and, you know, people should get paid for the work that they do.
Actually, we're a feudal country, but that's a whole other world. A whole other program.
Okay, well, yeah, I'm not an expert on that. But people should get paid for what they do. And, you know, you can always argue that, well, you know, you can create more work for yourself and therefore you create more money for yourself by doing more tests or doing this or that. So what happened was is that in some things, like obstetrics, they came up with global fees for obstetricians. So the obstetrician doesn't make more money if he clamps the cord early or clamps the cord late. The obstetrician doesn't make more money if a woman has a vaginal birth or a C-section, other than maybe getting back to the office faster if he does a C-section. But he doesn't get paid more. And so that was one of the efforts to try to do that. However, when it comes to institutions like hospitals, they're not, there's no, you know, they get global sort of fees from insurance companies. But that's why they have to go and find other codes, because they can't make enough and what they're being paid by their global fee to keep their doors open. I mean, most hospitals, I don't know how they actually make it through federal funding and donations, because they aren't going to make it based on a typical capitalistic picture. But the reason I bring this up is because people are always complaining, well, why should an institution get paid more for doing more things? It makes them only encourage them to do more things. And I would bring them back to the analogy of the trial lawyers of America, okay? And the longer a lawyer works on a project, the more money he makes. If he's charging $300 an hour, what's the incentive for the project to end? And I always say that when you get to it, something like a divorce. You know, divorces go on until the money runs out. If they had a global fee for divorce like they had a global fee for obstetrics, most divorces would be over in 2 weeks, because the lawyers want to get them over with. But as long as there's something to keep making money on, then there's no reason to end a divorce. There's no reason to end a negotiation. There's every reason for lawyers to write letters back and forth to each other. And so I don't want people to just pick on the healthcare system. It is a problem throughout it permeates everything. But I think behind the insidious evil, behind what goes on in our lives that takes away our freedom, is our legal problems in this country. And that's one of them. Okay, because lawyers make money off the misfortunes of others, and it's a never-ending thing. And I know that I have my thing about lawyers, and I would love to get a trial lawyer on your show sometime and debate them, because I think it would be a very interesting show.
Okay. It would be interesting, yeah.
Right?
You're on.
The other thing about American legal system, besides that individual system, is that all these things that are done, okay, are always rationalized. Sometimes they're based on it, sometimes they're just rationalized by the fear of litigation. If we don't take this baby to the nursery, and if we don't stick its heel 6 times to monitor its sugars and its bilirubin, and that baby ends up having a jittery seizure because its sugar got too low, or that baby gets something called kernicterus because its bilirubin got too high, we are going to have our asses sued. So instead of using common sense and picking, can I say that on the radio, by the way?
I think that's probably.
On internet, I can say anything, can I?
Well, no, there's some things you can't. You'll get us in trouble, but that one's okay.
Okay. You get to the point where the decision of what to do is based not necessarily on common sense or a physician or a nurse's skill, okay? It's based on a one-size-fits-all protocol that's put in place by administrators, hospital committees, and hospital lawyers to protect the hospital. And again, it all boils down to the main topic of today, and that's our legal system. And if people in America want to take back their health care and they want to take back many other aspects of our life, then the thing that we should be discussing far sooner than a health care bill would be a tort reform bill.
But don't they go hand in hand? Doesn't this go hand in hand with the issue of the cartel aspect of medicine?
How do you mean, Rich?
Well, I mean, if people have no alternative but to use standard Western obstetrics, then is it? I mean, if you have tort reform, when you say tort reform, I assume that you're talking about caps on legal liability.
Yeah, loser pays system, caps on, so getting rid of frivolous lawsuits. Loser pays, having mediations or panels that review things before you can bring a lawsuit. Maybe not everything going, you know, having maybe panels that where it's not necessarily brought before a jury, where you have to spend 3 weeks explaining what DNA is to the O.J. Simpson jury, and then they didn't get it anyway.
Well, in order to address all this, don't we really need reform that looks at the research that you're talking about and sharing with us about what we should be doing with babies and mothers?
But also we need alternatives.
Like reforming the maternal health care system itself?
But the knowledge is out there. I think Rich is right. The knowledge is out there. It's not going to be useful if the people that run the institutions don't care.
But that's the kind of reform I think we need, is where legally they're made to care.
But wouldn't a good way to make them care would be to offer them alternatives like chiropractic, midwifery, you know, something that is outside of the realm of standard Western medicine.
And, right. I mean, I would agree with Rich's view, because I don't want to legally start to force people to do something, because then you're basically using the legal system to your advantage.
Well, we had our theys confused, because I was talking about the hospital, the obstetric system. That was who I was talking about when I said they. We know the science that's there. We should be able to say or have some sort of reform that says, you know, you're going to incorporate all this. And one thing that's just as important is keeping the mother and the baby in contact with each other, and the baby getting the cord blood and all of that.
And informing the mother of the need for this, and then you know, if Western medicine doesn't want to offer this, then we need to make sure that there are alternatives presented.
Yeah. Well, it's a lovely idea that we're putting forward. Again, we also have to deal with the institutions that we have would do everything they can to prevent the development of alternative choices.
Well,
you can be sure that the American Hospital Association would not be very happy if you started to suddenly see birthing centers pop up that allowed women to do these things, but also had operating capability.
But how did they get their legal status? I mean, how is it possible that, for instance, a licensed medical doctor that spent tens or hundreds of thousands of dollars on his education,
mm-hmm,
and is up to his ears in debt by the time he graduates, you know, is the only profession allowed to prescribe prescription drugs, for instance, or, you know, restrict or testify before congressional committees talking about the dangers of natural remedies? You know, this puts way too much power into financially compromised people.
And we're getting off the topic, and I need to take a break because, as usual with you, Dr. Fishbein, we're just going for it, and it's great. And I'm watching the clock, and we have 20 minutes, and this is our last 20 minutes with you for a while. So I do need to take a break. But I wanted to share with you an idea, and I know that I heard about when my ex was in an OB residency in New York. They were trying to create this system where the doctor and the hospital and the insurance company would each put in, I think it was $600 for every birth, into a pot that would go to take care of babies that needed care during or after they were born, because you mentioned that at the top of the hour about the enormous cost of taking care of a handicapped child. You mentioned something about that, not in those words, but the cost of a child that's injured. And so this pot would automatically, it's totally separate from insurance and had a third party entity that was taking care of it, but they would evaluate babies that needed care and needed financial support, and it was an alternative to malpractice. Have you heard of anything like that?
Yeah, well, I mean, there's been... did we take a break? Or
yeah,
we...
and I just wanted to put that out there. Oh, okay.
I mean, I'm happy to answer that.
Yeah, and I want to just let our listeners know that we are KOPN, 89.5 FM, KOPN, Columbia. And we're talking to Dr. Stuart Fishbein, an obstetrician from California. And this is Thought Crime Radio, where the voice is for the human rights of babies. And we're going to take a break, and we're going to come right back. And when we do, we're going to give Dr. Fishbein the last 20 minutes. I think we're going to go out at the top of the hour, talking as the music comes on and the next crew comes in. And so we'll go to a break now.
This district-wide gallery crawl includes art for viewing and purchase and demonstrations from 6 to 9 p.m. Participating businesses include Creative Days, KOPN, Make Sense, Missouri Theater Center for the Arts, Mustard Seed Fair Trade, and Orr Street Studios. Check participating businesses for a brochure.
Gimme Truth is an annual filmmaking contest open to all Missourians. Contestants should create a two-minute or less profile of a Missourian that is either 100% true or 100% false. The 10 best videos will become part of a game show at the True False Film Festival, where visiting filmmakers from around the world compete against each other in guessing which videos are true and which ones are false. All winners will receive prizes. Submit your work by February 13th. More information from Jay Johnson at 864-9185 or email gimmetruth10, that's 10, at gmail.com.
Okay, so we're back to Dr. Fishbein, and before you leave us today, I really want you to have the opportunity to talk more about your plan that you've mentioned in the last two shows to create an alternative, because I think that's your work in trying to create an alternative and a bridge. So I really want to make sure that you have airtime for that.
Thanks. So you want me to answer your emergency fund question?
Sure.
Okay. It's been suggested before that that one of the ways of dealing with tragic outcomes, because in birth, when there's a baby that's born with a tragic outcome that lives, okay, it's tragic when they die, but certainly not as expensive to society as when they live with a handicap that might affect them for 60 or 70 years. Our system is not set up to deal with that, and people don't have insurance for that could last that long. So they're kind of stuck in a situation where the only option they have is to sue, even though they may love their practitioner and don't feel they did anything wrong and the choices they made were theirs. You know, when it comes to financial fears and burdens, people are looking and grasping at anything they can get, and then there's obviously an industry out there ready to jump on and help them out. So there has been some talk of a fund. Now, the idea of a hospital and a doctor and an insurance company supporting the fund as the sole donors, to me, it would be abhorrent. I don't think that if it's a societal problem, okay, then I think society should pay for it. And I think that it should come out of a general fund of taxes or wherever it should come from, but it shouldn't be coming from certain individuals. I think it's wrong to tax. I think in the state of Minnesota, they actually tax doctors on their gross income to pay for people in the state who don't have health insurance. I mean, to me, that's ridiculous. I mean, does that mean we should tax restaurants to pay for people who don't have food? do we tax airlines for people who can't fly? I mean, how do they decide to do that, and why the doctors in Minnesota let that happen beyond me? But it's just another representative of Rich's point that, you know, people just should be marching on Washington or standing up for what they believe in, and they just don't do it. So I think having a fund would solve a lot of problems, because ultimately people sue for two reasons. The main one is economic, and occasionally they'll sue because they're angry. Okay? Well, if we have ways of dealing with anger that were better suited for conflict resolution, that would be great. But ultimately the bottom line is money, and if it really is something where it's going to be a cost to society for a very long period of time, then society should help pick up that cost. I don't think it would be, and I think it's a great idea, because it would again, if you can remove some of the fears of liability, you may start to see a reversal in the trend toward following every little protocol as one size fits all. But until that happens, guys, you're not going to see too many physicians like me or midwives who are willing to who are able or willing to deviate from the protocols that come down from on high. even when they don't consider the individual, as we said earlier in the show.
Because you really can't.
At that level, you can't. But that's not what medicine is. Medicine takes place in the exam room. It doesn't take place in boardrooms. But the decisions that affect the exam room are all made in boardrooms. And they're made with faceless, nameless people. We talked about this last week, too. It's the same as a loan committee at a bank. I mean, they'll deny your loan without ever meeting you. They don't ever have to look you in the eye. They don't have to ever understand who you might be. They don't care.
Right.
It's one formula. And it's very dehumanizing.
Well, what I liked about that formula that I talked about was that it's those three players that you talked about.
Mm-hmm.
The doctor, the hospital, and the insurance company, and they're all sort of equally involved in $600 at that point is probably much less than it would be if there was litigation.
Well, I haven't heard a proposal for a specific number, and I don't know where that amount came from.
This was like 1990.
I just think it's unfair for a burden that is societal, okay, to be taken on. I mean, to be taken on by certain special interest groups. It just,
I'm not sure if it's just societal when we're talking about all these things we've been talking about, where we're not using common sense, they're not using science, and these are harming babies.
But there are
that's not the kind of harm we're talking about.
They're unavoidable issues, but what you're talking about is a much larger issue, which is the fact that the society doesn't take care of its people. That really, in that sense, medicine is constrained to function in a sustainable, economically sustainable way within a system which is fundamentally barbaric.
Well, that's another issue for another day, too, with my opinion about the fact that the idea that we are developing more and more of a society that thinks that it's the government's responsibility to take care of you.
Right.
I mean, rather than your communities, your families, your churches, your synagogue, whatever. I mean, the idea that the government can do it better, I mean, we are breeding a society of people dependent on government, and we're gradually heading in that direction. But the more we head in that direction, the less personal responsibility is going to play, and the less likely are you going to have your people who are going to say, you know what, I made this decision, I understand the risks and consequences of it, and I understand the benefits, and I chose it. Didn't work out the way I wanted to. I'm accepting that responsibility.
It's interesting how this dynamic is producing people who are intellectually impaired and thus less likely to question, these issues that you're talking about.
That may very well be true.
And less likely to function in an independent way, with the initiative necessary to have fulfilling lives.
So, Dr. Fishbein, tell us about your plans. What you'd like to see happen?
Well, what I'd like to see happen is I'd like to see some of your listeners who happen to be multimillionaires come forward and offer to be a benefactor to help us build a facility here in the west side of Los Angeles. But putting that aside for a second, what we're trying to do is we want to eventually build, and I'm not alone in this idea, clearly. There are many people throughout the country who we communicate
right.
and talk about it. But the idea is to have a birthing center where women can labor in a non-threatening, non-medicalized environment where birth is treated as the glorious process that it is as opposed to a disease, but also have it be either adjacent to, attached to, connected to, or part of a facility that has an operating room or operating rooms in it, so that if there is a problem that happens suddenly, which doesn't happen very often, just a couple percentage of births where it happens, that they can then have those things dealt with in a surgical fashion when it's necessary. But even in that case, it's still the mindset is that the baby, if the baby's fine when it's born, then they still have the birth center mindset where the baby can still stay with the mother. The mother doesn't need to go to a recovery room by herself, and the baby goes to a nursery, to, as Rich says, to be put in an isolation chamber and wrapped up like, what do you call it, Rich?
A straitjacket,
wrapped up like a straitjacket, okay?
So the baby stays on the mother's chest and...
The baby can go to recovery room with the mother and stay in the mother's bed with her, okay? I mean, the mother's not sick. She just had a surgery, and yes, there needs to be some vital signs and things that need to be watched carefully, but this is not a woman who had open heart surgery or ruptured appendix.
Skin-to-skin contact is vital for the developing immune system of the baby.
I know.
It really is. It really is a matter of looking at, you know, when a woman has a vaginal birth or a cesarean birth or whatever, but what does the baby need at that point?
Well, especially when babies, you know, babies that come through the vagina are exposed to things that they don't get when they come through a cesarean incision. And so even more importantly, probably, in those babies that are born by cesarean is to have contact with an immediate contact with their mom.
And the babies are sterile. It's not like they're going to, you know, contaminate the mother's womb. Wound.
No, that's right. I don't think that that's a concern. I'm not exactly. Again, the logic behind it, Rich, is basically not about the medicine. It's about the protocols and procedures and logistics of treating birth as a medical problem.
Well, how can doctors get empowered in this system?
Well, doctors who stand up for patients can get some changes made in their committees. They can get certain rights for certain patients. If a patient really wants their baby in recovery room, you can usually work it out. But I'll tell you, it really sometimes requires a time commitment and a Herculean effort on the part of the physician to break the protocols of the hospital to get the patient what she really wants and needs. And then, of course, the physician will suffer for it later because he'll get written up and he'll get letters in the mail and have to respond to the letters from the committees and stuff like that. That you didn't do this. You refused to let the baby go to the nursery,
crazy.
It's crazy because it's more important about following the rules.
Do doctors
whether the rules are reasonable enough to be followed?
So you mentioned this birth center, and I mean, I understand what I understand a birth center to be. How would this be different from the freestanding birth centers that you have in a lot of states?
Well, it would be different because if it's got an associated operating room attached to it, you would have the main care would be given by midwives, which really should be doing most of normal birth. Obstetricians do not really need to be doing normal birth. But if you have an operating room available, then you could also have this birthing center could also be delivering breeches and vaginal birth after cesareans, those sorts of things, which now essentially women are just getting C-sections for because regular hospitals won't allow them to even have the attempt at a vaginal birth, and the idea of having that sort of birth at home. Some women are being forced to, or making that choice simply because they have no choice in their community. Mm-hmm. But ultimately, if there's a problem with one of those home vaginal birth after cesareans or home breech deliveries, it's going to cause a huge stir in the community. Whoever was backing that person is going to get ridiculed and written up, and their life is going to be made miserable. And, you know, it's going to be harder and harder again because of the legal fears that people have for doctors to be willing to back up anybody who wants to do a home birth of that type.
So a major difference is, what I'm hearing you say, is that it's led by physicians, and most birth centers I know of are led by midwives.
Well, it's not. No, it's a collaborative effort, and essentially what I'm saying is that midwives would be the ones doing most of the labor patients, but there would be a physician who is available for consultation.
But that's a key thing, getting a physician to even back midwives in a traditional birth center is a huge thing. So that's what I meant by that. It's like it's the doctors who are seeing the need for this alternative.
Right. And some doctors. I think a lot of physicians would never consider backing midwives or dealing with midwives in a birthing center environment would feel better about this because it's more comfortable to what they know.
Right.
Which is medicalized birth, although they'd have to be able to take their hands and sit on them. Which is one of the things that was taught to me by one of my professors. What's the most important thing an officer can do with his hands? It's to sit on them and do nothing. Okay? And if you can learn to do that, then I think the physicians would jump on board with this sort of a model, too, because really their only major concern really is the ability of an operating room available for those emergencies. I think most physicians would be delighted to get out of hospital births. I think that the paperwork, the ridiculousness, the scheduling, the rules that they have to follow drive a lot of physicians crazy, even physicians who are not known for being supportive of midwifery. They just don't like it anyway.
So they need to be educated about the potential for them.
Right, but it still is going to require the models to be built and in practice so that people can actually see them up and running and working before it's going to be generally accepted. So you need some prototypes developed around the country, whether it's in Florida or Texas or California.
And that's what you'd like. That's what you'd like to do.
I would love to be able to. I would love to be totally involved with that. I've collaborated with midwives for over 20 years, and they do a great job.
So we just need some millionaires out there that really get this work to support you.
Yeah, benefactors. We need people who know how to get things done as far as the business end of things.
So that you guys and you and your colleagues around the country could create a new model.
A new human race.
Right. A new model so that human rights could be respected, that women's choices could be respected, that birth could be demedicalized, that it would solve a lot of the issues that you guys have discussed over these 3 weeks that I've been involved with you.
And you know what else it would help is the physicians out there who don't have a voice either, and they have to do these things that they really don't want to do, and then they just become hardened to it or whatever. I mean, that can't be good for them either.
No, and you're right. You're right. When you're a physician at a big institution, like the institutions around here, I mean, you really are a faceless, nameless soul walking around.
That's really sad.
It is. And it used to be, it was different in years gone by, and the business of medicine has taken the running of hospitals away from physicians and turned it over to businessmen, where it is not individual friendly.
Well, I wish you the best of everything in that endeavor, and I totally, totally support it.
Thanks, Janelle. And the other thing, too, that would be great with this would be that if you had a facility like this where you could do breaches, okay, you can then retrain new medical students and new residents in the art of doing breech delivery. Whereas right now, in order to do, there aren't enough breech deliveries at any teaching institution for any physician coming out of residency to ever feel comfortable doing it. So it will eventually become an extinct art, which is sad because the C-section rate will only go up, and it's a tragedy because every now and then somebody's going to come into an emergency room with the butt sticking out of the vagina, and no one's going to know what to do, and they're going to scramble to push that baby butt back inside,
and
pull the baby out
babies.
Of the abdomen, which is about the stupidest thing you can possibly do.
Oh my God.
And then they'll pat themselves on the back thinking, what a wonderful job that we got the baby out by cesarean before it came out of the vagina.
And that's a hard birth for a human being to go through, and I'm very sorry, but we are out of time, and the tech guys who are up at 6 are here, and we have to say goodbye to you, Dr. Fishbein. We have really, really appreciated you and enjoyed having you on the show for the last 3 weeks. We look forward to having you on again maybe in the spring.
We can only guess the kinds of problems you're having trying to pursue science in such a system.
Thank
yeah,
you.
We really appreciate the work that you're doing, and
well, the opportunity has been great for me, guys. And all we can do is, in my level, is to spread the word, because it has to come from the individuals. So I think the women out there need to, and their husbands, and their mothers and daughters and stuff need to get out there and need to really ask for these choices.
And then you have the last word there. Thank you so much. Take care.
Okay. Adios.
Thank you.
This is Janelle for Thought Crime Radio. We are the voices for the human rights of babies, and we're here on KOPN 89.5 FM, Columbia, Missouri. Up next is the Tech Guys. Join us next week.
Better and better.